It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And if he sounds like he's somewhere else, it's because he's somewhere else. America's,
that is correct.
Yep, America's favorite soccer dad is away once again in Atlanta this time. And
yeah, a little northeast of Atlanta, but close enough.
It's a good poke. Coming down the main way and going to get ahead of Valdosta before Trump comes in.
Oh, I didn't know he was going to be there.
Yeah. I don't know exactly when, but you know what the traffic pattern does. I'm not sure.
Well, we can always cut over to 95.
Yeah.
Get out that way.
It seems like a little bit of overkill maybe to even think about that, but just in case, it wouldn't hurt. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure it's amazing just being up here that it's still election season. Every commercial is for the Senate race. It's so annoying. I thought we were done with it until I got here.
On one of the shows we were watching over the weekend, one of the guys was out interviewing people on the street somewhere in Georgia, and he asked her something about it. She said, "It's annoying. I can't wait till it's over. These commercials are driving me nuts."
I don't blame them.
You know, the other one, too. I don't know if they even have time for them up then, but your mom and I are getting real, real sick of hearing Joe Namath talk about your Medicare options. But I think that one is coming to an end Monday or something like that. Yeah, Alan's just pointing to this TV screen up in the corner. It's on. Unbelievable. Anyway, here we are. little asides there. Oh, but one more quick thing, too. All this soccer work you're doing seems to be paying off from what I read the other day about your son making the team at school.
Yeah, he made his middle school team as a seventh grader, which is not everyone does. A lot of it is filled up with the eighth grader, so I was pretty proud of him for that one.
Good. I can see it now. You sitting there going, ka-ching, scholarship.
Yeah, let's not get ahead of ourselves. But
hey, it is a financial show. What the heck, right?
Yeah, that would be for the amount of money we've invested in their soccer, it might break even.
Good point. Very good point. All right, everybody, those of you who are regulars, thanks for being there again. We love it. Thanksgiving's over, and believe it or not, three shows from now, Christmas will be over. It is really coming up fast. We've got a little early gift this week from the market, and hopefully we'll get a few more of those. I'm not really sure why, but somewhere out there, somewhere ahead of us, 6 to 9 months down the line, a lot of people are really feeling optimistic, probably much more so than I am at this point. But we'll talk about that and other things today. You know, I've been on an inflation watch a lot, so our trivia question, which we'll give out after the first break, is involved with inflation. And then we can talk about anything else Adam and I would like to talk about, unless one of you picks up the phone and dials 904-222-8255, at which time you will immediately be put on air, and we will talk about what you'd like to talk about. So the rules are simple, and we don't bite heads off or anything like that, so don't be afraid to call in and chit-chat or get a question answered or whatever. And, of course, you can always, if you want to, email us at info@vanweefinancial.com if you don't want to go on air, and we will get an answer out to you either today or next week. So this week in the market was a winner. We hit a grand slam yesterday, I would say. Isn't that about right, Adam?
With all three indexes reaching an all-time high, I would say,
And the small caps finally doing what they haven't been doing lately.
Well, lately they have, just not for the last.
It depends on your definition
years.
Of lately, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, in the immediate lately, they've been doing quite well. Prior to that, they had been lagging the broad market by a wide margin.
Mm-hmm.
So it is nice to see them finally catching up, because the other option was that the large caps dropped back down to meet them. And I'd much rather see them come up and meet the large caps where they are. So the reason behind all of this rally is twofold this week. One has been the same reason that's been for a while, which is the vaccines and the potential that those have to completely change 2021 and have it look nothing like 2020 with things opening back up and getting back to life as quote-unquote normal. The other reason is that, imagine this, Democrats suddenly look like they're willing to pass a smaller stimulus bill. I wonder why.
Amazing, isn't it?
It really is. It's, I mean, after long, hard thought and the best interest of the people in mind, they have decided to come back to the table right after it looks like Trump has lost the election. So go figure. So that was the other reason that the market had a little bit of a tailwind this week. And I think those two things are combining to push the market to levels that I'm not super comfortable with. And it doesn't sound like you are either.
Nope. Not terribly comfortable.
So, yeah, I feel like we're getting too far. We've gone a little bit parabolic. And whenever that happens, you know what tends to be the result of it. The other thing is that bullish sentiment continues to trend higher, and bearish sentiment is now at the lowest point of this year.
Yep.
Now, imagine that. If I told you that right now there's less bearish sentiment than at any other point in this year, it just doesn't
more bearish sentiment.
I'm sorry. Yes, bearish sentiment is at the highest. Wait.
Yeah.
No, it's at the lowest. Bullish is at the highest.
Oh, that actually. I'm sorry. I'm
mixing it. Yeah, it's a contrarian indicator. So,
all right, start over. I won't interrupt you.
Okay. Yeah, so bearish sentiment is at the lowest point of this year, and right. It's a strong contrarian indicator, and I really don't like buying when others are also buying. I like buying when others are selling, and so there just aren't any sellers out there. Everyone is buying, and to me that is a setup for a reversal at some point in the not so distant future. So right now I'm selling, and I'm not doing much buying at all.
No, I'm much like you. Whatever cash we've got on the sideline, I'm keeping there, and maybe adding a little bit here and there, and subtracting a little bit. But I'm right on my target right now, so I'm not making any changes on the target at this point.
Yeah, and we raised our cash levels for our clients prior to the election, and we're just sitting on it right now, waiting to see what happens in January in the runoff elections here in Georgia, and also just with the recent run-ups in the market to see if there is some sort of correction, because I pretty strongly feel that there will be one at some point. So that's something we're keeping an eye on.
Yeah, more of a correction than a downturn, unless there's some news that would justify the downturn.
I haven't seen. I firmly believe that the market should go up in 2021. There's a lot of reasons behind that, but the everything is setting up for a pretty nice year. I just think that right now we've already priced in that pretty nice year, and it's not even January yet. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Heck, we had a good year in the last 4 days.
Yeah, seriously.
And another good year in the month before that.
No doubt about it.
I don't know. I don't know what happened there. But a little. I must have touched a button or something. Please excuse me. Anyway, we are going to take a short break, pay some bills, and we've got a lot to talk about, and not just in the market, but in the jobs reports that came out this week, which I would call really, really predictable. There, how can you continue the pace of job growth that we had the past few months when they're reshutting the economy? That doesn't make sense. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And as I said earlier, Adam is away at a soccer game in Atlanta, and I bet it's colder up there.
Oh, man, we had an 8 o'clock game this morning, and my toes are still thawing out.
I hesitate to tell you how beautiful it is here. But
oh, I'm well aware. It's supposed to actually be pretty nice here. Once the sun comes out later today, it should be around 50 and sunny. So I'm looking forward to that.
I can tolerate that. Well, in this last week, the market had kind of a strange reaction to some job reports that were just decidedly mediocre. And I'm not sure exactly what that was about.
They really were. It was odd. Again, I think that the market is looking past all the data and just saying vaccine and stimulus equals Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And it's not, I don't know if that's the right way to look at it, but that certainly appears to be what's happening. The ADP number came out on Wednesday, and it missed expectations. It wasn't by a little bit.
I thought
bit,
it was pretty good,
wide
though.
Margin.
Yep. I thought you it was, did? Yeah, I thought 307 was pretty acceptable given the circumstances.
Versus 440 estimated, and it also was pretty weak last month, yep. Unlike the headline non-farm payroll number, which was also a miss on Friday, 245,000 versus 460 expected. So mm-hmm. not quite half, but not that far off of it either. The unemployment rate did drop from 6.9 to 6.7, which was good to see.
And except then the for the reason why stunk. People left the workforce.
Yep. And that's what I was about to get to. The participation rate also missed expectations, came in at 61.5 versus 61.7%. And a little bit of better news, average hourly earnings climbed more than expected by 0.3% and are now up 4.4% year over year. That's a really strong number. So,
and that's one of the reasons. That. Yeah, I just wanted to get some of that out. I want to fill in the trivia question today because it is about inflation. And what you're seeing now with the rapid rise in the cost of employing people is going to contribute more to it. And there's yet another factor that we'll get to, too. But anyway, first off, the trivia question sponsored, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Our loyal listeners have heard us many times talk about inflation in terms of the Chapwood Index, which was invented by a fellow named Ed Butowski, who, as I've said many times, is a very interesting character, but I digress. It is a measure of inflation that is consistent. He takes the 100 largest cities and compares the same purchases every 6 months and prints his Chapwood Index of inflation. And it underscores how the U.S. government suppresses the rate of inflation. So my question for today is, what does the Chapwood say the rate of inflation is in Jacksonville, Florida, for the first 6 months of this year? And that's an annualized rate, and I'll take it within 0.25%. So if anybody has an idea or a guess, just call it in, and maybe you'll set some kind of a bracket for people. Anyway, that was one of the things I wanted to get to. The other one being energy, so you can kind of weave that into, if you will.
I will. I was just about to get to that. So with the exception of utilities, all the sectors of the S&P are now positive for the month of December. However, there's a pretty wide disparity in returns among the sectors that are positive. Some of them are up less than 1%, while energy is up more than 10%. Just in the month of December, which is crazy. It's been four trading days.
Haven't heard words like that in a while, have we?
No, but there's a big asterisk on that because it is still down more than 30% on the year. So
there is that.
If you bought at mid-year, you're probably pretty happy right now. If you're still holding from previous years, you're still not very happy, although you're happier than you were earlier this year. So energy has just been a dog lately, and I still think that, again, this is another trade that I understand why it's happening, but I think it's getting a little bit ahead of itself. The fact is, oil has a long, long road to go back to being even at normal levels of consumption. And then even at normal levels, our production outpaces our supply, or at least it has been for the last several years. So I don't necessarily understand the run-up, and I would be very careful trading in energy right now.
I think it's probably sort of second-guessing a Biden presidency where a lot of things get shut down, reduced, marginalized, whatever. I'm not sure that's in there, but I'm at a loss like you are to explain it any other way.
I mean, I guess if you look at his sort of pseudo-promise to end fracking and then retracting it and going back on it. If he does do anything like that or ban new fracking or whatever his position is, which it isn't really clear. But anything that sort of put a damper on fracking would drive prices up a little bit and limit supply a little bit. So I think maybe that is playing into that trade a little.
I have to think so. I can't think of another reason. The worldwide economy and the domestic economy both are hitting some slow patches. You know, it is amazing to me that you could look at what was going on since all the PPPs and paycheck protection and all that has run out, and that the queen of the house is totally unwilling. And she said it this week. She said it was my choice not to make a deal before now. And that means that all those people who are losing their jobs, and there are many, many more now, it's hard to keep up with the job losses by putting new ones in when so many establishments are shutting down. So they got counted as nothing compared to politics. But that's why I wasn't real surprised with these jobs reports. Why would you think it otherwise to look at what's going on and think, what, there's going to be another 800,000 jobs created? I don't think so.
No, it probably isn't possible right now. We're in fact, we're hearing more and more about re-locking down in several states, including California, just parts of New York, Michigan. So I agree. It's going to be tough for the jobs numbers to keep expanding when we're shutting down more and more establishments, and there's no help for those businesses that are forced to shut down right now. So I agree. It's going to be a rough winter, I think. Another reason I wonder about the market getting so far extended right now.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. But my leading indicator for the jobs market is the survey that's done by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, but it's not the headline survey. It's the household survey. You'll sometimes find that jumping way up, and then the next 2 or 3 months, you get a lot more jobs created. That's because the self-employed people find gigs again, and they go back to work. But did you see the number on the household survey this month? It had a negative sign in front of it. 74,000 jobs lost and 560,000 people no longer in the workforce equals a reduced unemployment rate and an absolutely pathetic outlook for jobs. That's the one that scares me.
The only good jobs news was that weekly claims improved again this week after climbing week over week the previous week. So that's a trend back in the right direction. They're still very, very elevated relative to normal terms, but seeing it move down is a good sign.
You just wonder what percentage of that is people who've run out of benefits. So that's the part that scares me. I'm sounding a lot more negative right now because I thoroughly expected something to have happened by now. The good news, and as you mentioned earlier, probably what's stimulating the market right now, is that it appears that they're talking again, and action appears to be on the cusp anyway. I do not think these people want to go home for Christmas without this done, because they are going to face an angry revolt of epic proportion, in my opinion.
What do you think is going to happen? Will the approval rate drop below 20%? Or, I mean, we know that.
I think that's already probably been done.
Yeah.
That's funny.
There was a little bit of data that backed up the jobs data for November. The ISM services and manufacturing reports both showed that the sectors both continue to expand, but at a slower rate than in October. So we're seeing growth, but it's at a slower rate, which is right now when if we were not hitting this sort of new surge in COVID cases, I think you would continue to see those two numbers increase at a equal or higher rate than we did last month. So that kind of backs up what we're seeing in the jobs numbers.
I think so. Regardless of what happens, I was thinking about this one this morning, and I checked it, and it was indeed Thomas Jefferson who once said, "You get the government you deserve." Now, in light of what's going on these days, that kind of hits home, doesn't it? Hopefully they'll forget the bickering for a while and help the people who need it. The shutdowns, job losses, the lack of economic anything for 3 weeks at a time if you're California, all of that stuff it's not following the science. If you look at the science, there is absolutely no justification for this. So that brings it down to one possible answer. That answer is politics. Let's get over it, people, no matter which way it goes. You know, we won't be happy if we lose, but we won't be tearing things up in the streets either. So. Anyway, after this, let's get back to some more fun stuff after the break. I'll repeat the trivia question, and we'll discuss some topics of more interest. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I want to repeat the trivia question. According to the Chapwood Index of Inflation, what has been the annualized rate of inflation in Jacksonville, Florida, for the first 6 months? Might surprise you a little bit. All right, you want to beat anything else to death on jobs in the market, or shall we move along?
The only other things I would mention would be that the dollar just hit a 2.5-year low this week. Yep. So as with anything like that, there are winners and losers when the dollar goes up, and same when the dollar goes down. So the dollar tends to move slowly over long periods of time, and it's dropped relatively quickly. I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bump, but I would also not be surprised after that if it continued its decline. So something to keep an eye on. And then also, you can file this under the "we warned you" category. If you're holding TLT or any other long treasuries ETF, you probably are regretting that right now. At one point during the year, that ETF was up either close to or over 30%, and now it's up just 16% for the year, and it dropped almost 3% in November alone. During that same time, silver was up almost 7% and gold more than 3%, so probably a better safe haven than long treasuries right now. In fact, I don't know if there's a worse safe haven than long treasuries right now.
You're probably right. I actually did a little study on that early this morning, and my quest was, if you remember 6-8 months ago, something like that on the show, I was talked about, and we actually sent out a little client communication about my argument that it was a poor time to hold TIPS. TIPS are Treasury Inflation Protected Bonds issued by the federal government. And unlike most bonds, they pay a coupon rate, which is sometimes zero and sometimes over that. It's never negative so far. And the other thing is they get adjusted price-wise every month for the rate of inflation. So my argument in the spring was that interest rates were rock bottom, so you're not going to get that, and inflation was actually going negative. So even though the TIP doesn't get reduced below its face value, it also doesn't go up with inflation until inflation has replaced itself, so to speak. So if it crosses through zero on the way down, you got to wait till it hits zero on the way up before they'll do anything. So my argument there was, don't hold them right now. You can't possibly win in this thing. And I've been slowly changing my mind as I've been watching these inflation numbers come in. And then a couple of weeks ago, we had a very erudite caller come in and say, you know, it seems like it ought to be a good time for TIPS, but they look to be going down. And my comment at the time was, yeah, they're settling in a little bit, but I think it's temporary. So I looked. On September 2nd, The ETF we use is TIP, T-I-P. It's an iShare. And it was at 127.10. And then 2 months and 1 week later, it was at 124.65. So that was the softening era. But today, it's at 126.17, which is 1.22% up. And this one might surprise everybody. It certainly surprised me because I thought there'd be more weakness earlier in the year. Year to date, the gain on the TIP is 9.8% for a government bond fund that has some justification for holding it now. So I am thinking if you're holding long-term bonds right now, you might want to look at changing some of that into TIPS. It seems like an ideal time. Any comments on that one?
I think TIPS is just off that that ETF is just off its all-time high set a month or two ago at 127. It's at, actually, it's dropping in adverse trading right now. It's down around 125.60. It's pretty elevated. I don't know. I don't love it right now, but I would, if it drops a little bit more, I would be intrigued.
Okay, that's fair enough. But anyway, for those of you who have followed them and are curious about it, if you're not ready to do anything right now, at least stay tuned, because I think this has got to go. That is my opinion. Another couple things on the side. Last week's trivia question was about Medicare Part B being the highest inflation item that older people pretty much have to use, and how much it has outpaced the inflation that Social Security has given us over 20 years, which is a 46% increase in 20 years. Medicare Part B has outpaced that by 149%. Well, prescription drugs were right on its heels at 142%. And then little things like, homeowners insurance, that's up 118%. Real estate taxes, 83%. Overall medical, 71%. Even pet services and vets, 54%. And the one big one that hits all of us in Florida right between the eyes, oranges by the pound are up 71% over the inflationary increases we've gotten from Social Security. If you ever get the feeling that maybe you're not keeping up, there's a reason for that. You're not keeping up. That's very simple. So, another one. This is tax time. Yeah, a lot of people think of tax time as the April 14th when you take the shoebox and empty out all the receipts and start adding them up. That's not a very good method of tax planning these days. Although, frankly, after the last Tax Act in 2017, taxes have gotten a lot simpler for most people. It's still something that I think needs more attention than just doing that. One of the things that has become a real issue this year with remote working is the state taxes. If you are working for a company who lets you go wherever you want to go to work, so let's say you're one of those people at Microsoft and you live and work in Seattle, but oh my gosh, they let me go to Florida for 6 months or something like that. Well, Florida's not going to hurt you for that because we don't have a state tax. But what if you go to a state that does? Let's consider an example. Say a Florida professional golfer goes to California and wins a lot of money in a tournament. Who is going to be waiting at the door of the tent when he signs his scorecard? How about the tax guy from the state of California with his hand out? They want their cut because you earned it there. Professional basketball players travel around a lot. Baseball players, all these people have to file state tax returns for the states in which they earn their keep by playing a game or a tournament or whatever there. Now, if you are not aware of that and you're doing remote work from other places, you may well wind up getting caught. You should think about where you've been and what you've done over the past 11 and a half months and try to reconstruct your travel schedule and so on. And then, if I were you, I'd maybe make a call to a CPA and say, oh, look, I earned all this money in so-and-so state. Do I need to do anything about it? And you might be disappointed to find out that it would be a really good idea. So if that applies to anybody in the audience, think about it. Do something about it. You don't want to get caught short. Nothing I hate worse than getting a tax bill that I didn't expect. All right, we have a caller. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, gentlemen. Great show as always.
Oh, thank you so much. What's up?
I just thought I'd take a quick shot at the trivia question before you go to break.
Great.
How about 9%?
Yeah, and did you look that up? Yeah. Because you nailed it.
Oh, right?
Yep. Dead on.
Oh, my gosh. That was a total guess.
Well, I was thinking then your guesser is on straight.
8 and 9. I was thinking between 8 and 9 and I just went with the higher figure and
9%
on the high side.
Yeah, in fact, if anybody wants to get into that further, you can just do chapwoodindex.com, and it will give you these numbers every 6 months for 100 cities. You can get them 10 at a time or 25 at a time. Jacksonville was not spared the ravages of the inflation this time any more than it usually is. So excellent. Yeah, I keep telling people, radio talk show listeners are the smartest people out there, and you're just verifying my point again. How about
that? Well, that's very kind of you to say that. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you. I'll put you on hold, and Alan will pick up your stats, and we'll send you a little something from Mr. Bales.
Thank you again. Keep up the good work.
Thanks. All right. Well, that was interesting. There are good guesses, and there are great guesses. That was a great guess because it was to the tenth. I was going to give him a quarter of a point either way, but that one was really well done. All right, got a bunch more stuff for after the break, so don't go anywhere. We'll talk about whether or not you're young and own too much stock, which seems a little crazy to me, but we'll get into it. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You can call Troy at 662-9794, right here in the 904, and let Troy do it. Always good advice. All right, you own too much stock. That seems to me kind of a strange topic. It's about boomers like me, and I think it's very hard to generalize, but according to a Fidelity study, there are 7% of boomers with retirement accounts at Fidelity that have 100% stock. And that number is actually down from 10% of boomers. Well, usually, if you're holding that much stock, there's a reason, a good one. And that reason usually is that you're not really investing for yourself. You're investing for your heirs, et cetera, because you have enough to live on comfortably. So I can't fault it. I would hope that there are at least 7% of the people in the baby boomer generation who don't need the money. That would be a good demographic, meaning at least a few people are doing what they need to do to help themselves. But I wondered what Fidelity really thought. So I dug a little deeper than just in this article. I looked at their target date funds, Fidelity 2020 being the one that's for right now. And I was curious what the breakdown, the stock, bond, cash mix was in these things. So right now, they're saying if you're in the 2020 fund, meaning technically that was kind of supposed to expire this year, it was, not you, the equity percentage is 30%. I can't think of too many of our client accounts for people who are in the boomer generation where we would have as little as 30% in there, except for the people who are truly in total preservation mode. And we do have a couple of those. But they're really, really the rarity. So I went out and I looked going up in five-year increments because that's how they do their funds. The 2025 fund has 32% equities. The 2030 has 39% equities. And the 35 has 47. And it's 20 years from now in the 2040 fund where equities hit 53%. And that's constant for the 40, the 45, the 50, and the 55. Now, if you are in a position where you're thinking, I want the 2055 fund, that's 35 years of investing. And if you're using a 53% equity portfolio and only 7% bonds, guess what the big middle of that is? Now, this one really surprised me. Foreign stocks, 36%. Got a comment on that one, Adam?
So today, this year is the first time we've started, since we've been in this business, that I've started raising our foreign allocation. But we are nowhere near that high. And I have always thought that many, many asset managers and target date funds use way too high a percentage of foreign assets. And if you look over the last 10 years, that would not have been a very wise move. Now, that does not mean it won't be over the next 10 years. But for the last 10 years, if you did that, you severely underperformed the U.S. markets and the S&P 500.
Well, this little breakdown gets more interesting as you get into it. The 2025 fund has domestic equities at 32 and foreign at 28. That does not make sense to me. The 2030 fund.
Me neither.
Nope. 2030 fund, 39 and 26. I'm still uncomfortable with that. The 2040 fund, for instance, 53 to 36. And, you know, I can't come up with a scenario in my mind where that's a good idea to hold that much foreign stock. Don't know. The different kinds of risks when you get into foreign are greater than the ones here normally.
The only good thing about that right now is if you look at valuations, and if you're a value investor right now, the U.S. looks very, very the valuations are extremely overbought, and it's, I don't know, it just doesn't look attractive.
Yeah, now, but you know what? They don't change these things very much. I don't think that those allocations that they have today are reactionary. I think it's their plan. Doesn't that seem a little odd?
That is true. I was just talking if you were looking at it from our perspective, but you're right, they don't. So just to give you an example of how that would have hurt you over the last 10 years, SPY has seen a return of 268%, basically. In the same time, VXUS, which is the total Vanguard total international stock market ETF, so everything but the U.S., has returned 60%, so 208% less than the S&P 500. Now, would you have wanted half? Would you want 30% of your total return coming from international stocks in that scenario? No. But again, that's not indicative of forward return. So,
what was your time frame on that one?
That's a 10-year return number. Yeah,
that's long enough to make a statement.
Yeah, definitely. That is just. I mean, you really would have, you'd be disappointed if you had done that.
You happen to have, off the top of your head, the standard deviations for SPY and for that international, total international?
I do. They're almost identical. SPY is at 18.6% and VXUS is at 18.4%.
All right, let's put this in layman's terms then. You're taking the exact amount of risk and getting a fraction of the return.
That's right. And so if you look at the alphas, it's not even going to be comparable between the two. SPY is going to be a much, much better risk adjusted return than international stocks.
All right, for anybody playing the home game out there, I'd take a little look at your international percentage, and if it's up around where these things are, I think it's reasonable cause for a little concern, or at least a good discussion. Be a good icebreaker if you want to get talking to a planner or somebody who maybe doesn't feel exactly like Fidelity does. And I'm not picking on Fidelity. They wrote the article, and I used their funds only because they wrote the article. I would have used Vanguard or anybody else. I was so kind of taken aback by the title of the thing. Too much stock? I don't see that very often, and I don't think you do either when new people come in to see us. That's kind of a rarity.
Yeah, it usually is. People tend to err on the side of caution when they are not confident about investing or making those types of decisions.
Yeah, we've had a couple instances lately where people were truly paralyzed by this market, and I've had them over the course of almost 20 years in this business now. I've seen many, many cases of people coming in with what they're calling on TV now, analysis paralysis, just afraid to do anything for fear of doing something wrong. But the biggest thing you can do wrong is to do nothing. That's the real lesson here. Now, speaking of doing something, we've spent a lot of time on Roth conversions and the whole topic for the past, couple, 3 years now, because in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 that kicked in January 1, 2018, it seems right off the top that the provisions of that tax law make a really good case for a Roth conversion. And then you couple it in with some other things that happened, like the upcoming in 2022 change in the life expectancy tables, the increase in the 70 and a half age to 72 for your required minimum distributions. Those things have made a difference. Of course, another thing that helped, which wasn't directly part of my ongoing concern here, was the the non-requirement of RMDs, I guess is a good way to put it, for this whole year. But they're going to start again next year. And that probability, which as I see it right now is 99.5%, we're going to probably have to start RMDs next year, although some of us get to put it off an extra year. But in dealing with that over the past few days as I've been studying it, another thing came to light. The Secure Act 2.0, as it's commonly called, it is not law yet, and it may or may not become law this year. It has pretty good support, though. That would raise the RMD age to 75. And to me, that is an honest-to-goodness game-changer regarding Roth conversions. Just think how many more years, if you leave the whole thing in there, how many more years you get to accumulate funds without paying any taxes on them. And I'm going to do a lot more on this week, and I'm going to come up with some probably more significant conclusions by the next show, but I want to talk about it. It may be that Roth conversions for a lot of people are going to lose a little bit of luster if we get Secure 2.0. So I'll leave you for this week with that thought and a promise that I will look into it and see what happens, and I'll talk to you then. All right, well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week. This is the Bandley Financial Hour.